Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
And this is Squawk on the Street. I'm David Faber, along with Jim Cramer. Carl has the morning off. Of course, the market's in focus, as they always are at this time, given we count down from a half hour from now for the opening of the markets themselves, Jim. And again, it is a higher open that we are looking at, much like we did yesterday, where we were talking a great deal about the possibility of a new record, either intraday or all time on the S&P. Yesterday, it was that bizarre Russian vaccine news, and I think we can all term it bizarre. But today, it's Moderna signing a deal with the U.S. government, which is signing a lot of deals to make sure that there is manufacturing capacity in place to deliver a lot of doses of a vaccine if and when it does get through phase three trials.
Right. I mean, I was listening to Meg Trella's point. He's done, of course, unbelievable reporting. And my first reaction was to send Len Schleifer an email saying, how much is Regeneron getting? She mentioned Regeneron. They got $500 million in July. I mean, but I would say, right, David, is there any amount that you wouldn't spend on these companies to get this thing beaten? Because if we're spending $2 trillion to try to stay in place, we have got to flood the market with money. Make it so it's worthwhile for everybody. I have Emergent Bio tonight. They would be helping making a lot of these giant doses. And I think that you have to encourage these companies. It is really important. Moderna, Novavax getting a lot of money. I want to see J&J get the money. I want to see Pfizer get the money. But yeah, they've got to do it, David. They've got to.
They all will. Operation Warp Speed, which is the name that the administration has given to trying to develop a vaccine and antivirals and therapeutics as quickly as possible. There's money for all of them in terms of manufacturing. And the Department of Defense has contacted many of them. They are choosing in some ways winners and losers.
Right.
I reported, I think it was last week, Jim, you know, again, I'm following the Merck compound very closely on the antiviral side, of course. That has been offered as well. Of all of them, it's my understanding, to money from Operation Warp Speed. But your point is well taken, which is we need to be in a position when one of these, if not all of them, we can hope work, to manufacture at scale very quickly. And so we're seeing something unprecedented, which is the building up of manufacturing capacity before we even know whether there is an efficacious vaccine and or antiviral.
It's extraordinary. Extraordinary that J&J is committed to spending money to deliver a billion vials of something that we don't even know if it works. I mean, you and I have seen many different cases where companies have spent a lot of money on a drug that didn't work. Vaccines, we know, are very, very hard to make. It's encouraging. I want to see as many companies involved. But David, in the end, you're right. It's going to be the antivirals. That's what we're going to get first. And that's because you don't have to do these incredibly long day-by-day trials. Look, Russia did the opposite. Russia basically said, okay, we're giving it to people. That's not the American way. It's not the American way since thalidomide. And thalidomide being a horrible something that the FDA approved for what is now basically Revlimid, which is owned by Bristol Myers, but a terrible drug for pregnant women. And we don't want to do that. We don't want anything to happen.
We won't do that.
These are healthy people that are getting it.
I know. Exactly. They're healthy people, which is different, again, than these antivirals where you're sick or you've been exposed to somebody who's sick. You have a reason to take it. And if they work, obviously, it will be a key, potentially game changer in terms of the course of the virus and how we approach it in this country, Jim.
David,
but you're right.
You think
for a vaccine, you're not sick.
You're
not sick, so you don't want to get sick.
No, I mean, I'm going to try to get the J&J, and I'm totally conscious. I think every American should try to get in these. Why? Because we have to beat this thing. I mean, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin could come on all he wants, spend all he wants. The Fed can back up all the debt they want. But what we need is an antiviral that makes it so we can get through this period, and then a vaccine so that we can to eliminate this period. But it's Eli Lilly is in the nursing homes. Merck is with people who are sick. And that's the hope. Regeneron, people say, and we really have to differentiate between vaccine and people who are sick, because it's very different.
Meanwhile, let's move to the real economy for a second, because, of course, all of this would have the impact on being able to actually regenerate real economic activity in a significant way. We talk so often, it's all we've done for these last months now in terms of the divergence between the performance of the stock market and the economy, Jim. And it gets us back to Washington and where things stand, if they stand anywhere, in terms of a new relief bill. But, you know, let's not forget. I mean, anecdotally here, talked to a friend of mine in Chicago yesterday at a, I'm not going to say which hotel, a major hotel in the city center. 15 people in the entire hotel. Right. 15. Right. Not 15 rooms. 15 people, Jim. I mean, let's not lose sight of where we stand right now and the continued concern about states' ability to withstand huge budget deficits and have to make huge cuts, and the cities that have just suffered so dramatically across the board across this country.
Oh, you're so right. I mean, I was looking at a note for a Brinker, which a lot of people like. It's good company, good restaurant. And here they go. They're very happy because they're going to lose maybe 25 to 50 cents. And Chili's, their main brand, is only has minus 10.9 comps. I mean, these are extraordinarily bad numbers. But in this era of the pandemic, we're thrilled that people still go. I had Dom Wood on last night, who is the CEO of Federal Realty, which is the largest shopping center. Now, remember, that's open air, not mall, which is harder. And that's David Simon, Simon Properties. They've got these restaurants. They're expanding and you can do it. You go outside. But, David, come the fall, we have a new wave of COVID. Come the fall, it's too chilly to be outside. That is the argument against going with the industrials, going with the banks, and instead sticking with what we all know are the COVID-19 plays. David, this battle is going on. I actually last night said you had to increase in a barbell some of the industrials. I went on Twitter last night, which, of course, has been taking my life in my hands anyway, roundly criticized for thinking that perhaps a Union Pacific could rally here, even though Union Pacific has already rallied tremendously because people believe that we're not far from the promised land. David, the promised land is far, but you may have to invest in it already.
Yeah. Right. Well, and you mentioned, we discussed yesterday, of course, the significant rotation that we saw in the market to some of those names and how long it would be sustained. I mean, Jim, coming back to the real world again, given I have school-aged children and so many friends who do, I mean, this is a continued concern. What schools will open, what won't? You may have seen a number of major universities going all remote, not having kids on campus. We know about college football, what we're seeing there. In terms of, I think it's what, the Pac-10 and who else, Jim? You know it better than I do. But, you know, this is coming very soon.
And Big Ten.
We are not going to have a lot of kids, or as many as we hoped, all back in class. I mean, that is just a huge impediment to life getting back to normal.
Okay, so let's take Davis Square, all right? Let's take Davis Square in Boston. All right. Now, this is an area that I happen to love it there. Since we're talking about Tufts, obviously. There are, I don't know, 100 businesses that are adjacent because of all the students. Or you go to where my wife's on the board, Bucknell, probably 100 businesses adjacent to students.
Or Harvard Square, which is right near there, too.
Yeah, which has even more. Customers. And the retail, I remember when Brian Cornell told me that they were going to expand Target, two notes today, positive on Target, expand and have small Target formats to where there are colleges. Holy cow, David, no customers. What do you do? Target, fortunately, spent more time doing urban and it worked out. But I just feel that we are underestimating what will happen to whole cities. Where the cities are directly involved with the university of thousands of people. And what happens when you have thousands of people do not go to Big Ten games? I mean, this is America. I saw the president tweeting, you know, we should play football. Obviously, we would love football. We are a country where the big commerce elements happen to be when we gather. And, David, we can't gather. I don't know what happens. I'm watching Eunice Yu talk about how people are gathering at a Shake Shack in China. They have that ability because they put down the virus. We can't gather, but we're a gather country.
We are. And, of course, obviously, college and universities is all about congregating as well. Jim, I want to take a quick diversion here to talk about my friend Sumner Redstone, who passed
Your
away
friend,
at the age of 97.
And that's important. You knew him better than anyone in the media. So I'm really anxious to hear what you have to say, because he's a great man.
No, listen, we spent a lot of time together through so many of his very active years in terms of putting together the company we today know as Viacom CBS. I enjoyed all of those times, both when the cameras weren't on and when they were. I will miss him. Obviously, he has not really been in the public realm for some time, and I have not spoken to Sumner in quite some time. He does pass away at the age of 97, leaving a very big family as well. I think we've got a statement from his daughter, Sherry, who has obviously taken his place to some extent, at least, although she is not running Viacom, CBS in any way, the way that he did as CEO for many years of Viacom. My father led an extraordinary life that not only shaped entertainment as we know it today, but created an incredible family legacy. Through it all, we shared a great love for one another, Sherry Redstone says, and goes on to say he was a wonderful father, grandfather, and great-grandfather. I'm so proud to be his daughter, and I will miss him always.
David, how involved was he in terms of the split of the CBS split off, because it didn't work. And I had found until that he had the magic touch.
He did. And he and I had discussed it many times in terms of whether he acted rashly at the time because he was frustrated with the stock price or perhaps because he wasn't ready to make a decision on one leader for that business. And you're right. Remember, he had built this company first by leveraged buyout of Viacom. In 1987, I believe it was, when he was just turning 60 years old, he sort of began his public career, really, as a media mogul. And then moving from there, of course, the acquisition of Paramount, the big fight with Barry Diller that he had to acquire that business. I think it was over $10 billion. I remember covering it for CNBC at the time, although then Mr. Redstone and I did not really know each other. We would get to know each other quite well in the years to follow. Of course, he bought Blockbuster to help with the Paramount deal. Then came CBS. Then came Mel Karmazin. Oh, boy, that was not a great marriage. Then, you know, so many other things along the way. So many fights, so many battles, Jim. But you're right. The split was something that was contentious. And I did ask him during one of our interviews about whether he had a short-term focus to the detriment of the long-term. Here's the back and forth. Do you think that you hurt your own ability to think long-term by being on the phone every day?
No.
Getting quotes on the stock?
No, I'm not getting quotes.
Running the buyback.
I'm buying a stock buyback. We're buying a lot of stock.
But that's so short term. Do you think?
Why? No.
What do you mean why? You asked, is it 35, 36?
Wait,
is it 37? What is it?
Wait.
Buy 3,000.
We're not buying the stock to drive it. We're buying it because it's so cheap.
Those are some of those favorite words, of course. I'm buying it because it's cheap. Viacom is cheap. Viacom is the greatest stock in the world, the greatest company. Of course, Philippe Dumont was not the greatest CEO, and that was a decision I think that Sumner eventually came to regret. The man who ran Viacom for many years, benefiting from an enormous buyback using that cash flow, but not really positioning the company properly for the digital future, Jim.
Well, David, can you contrast him with really a man who I regard as a great American, Jeff Bukas, who, when confronted by me and you talking about what can happen with that stock, talked only about the long term. I mean, I know I wanted him to take radical action, and which would have been similar to what Redstone did, and he dismissed it. But he created tremendous value before riding off in the sunset. Very different people.
Yes, very different people. Now, that said, first of all, Mr. Redstone was an extraordinary intellect. I don't want to forget that. Graduated Harvard Law School. Again, I got to go back here in my mind. I think at the age of 20.
That's the best school in America.
Number one in his class. As somebody who went. Was a code breaker during World War II. He could speak Japanese.
Could he do Navajo,
so
too?
I mean,
that's incredible.
He was a code breaker. He was a great pianist. He was really, in many ways, just a unique individual, was Sumner. But you're right. He was very focused on the stock price, day to day to day, very focused on it being a reflection of his own performance to some extent. But he did tell us content is king, Jim. And you and I certainly still believe that. In many ways, I think that will be one of the things that we most associate him with, that quote.
But do you remember, David, when we were shocked when Netflix passed the market value of these companies and we thought that Netflix was wrong? It couldn't be. And it turned out Netflix was right. Now, was Sumner, was he proficient during that period when Netflix took off?
Yes. The landscape has changed dramatically. But I do think that the quote, content is king, will live on many years. Right. And certainly we are saddened to hear of the passing.
Well, Dave, you know what the one constant is here? You look exactly the same.
You know, he argued with me about that because he loved this diet that he was on. He was determined to live forever. He once told me that he would, you know, miss me when I was gone, but he would say a nice goodbye for me.
Oh, my. Cryogenic? He's not Ted Williams.
Kind of funny. But that was Sumner, man. That was Sumner. Listen, a guy who hung from the side of a building during a fire, right?
Jeez.
Nothing could stop him. Wow. He was relentless.
Titan.
Sumner Redstone, dead at 97. Shares of Tesla are up sharply in the pre-market. Company announcing a 5-for-1 stock split, saying that it wanted to make its shares more accessible to employees and to investors. The split will take effect on August 28th to shareholders of record of August 21st, and it will begin trading on a split-adjusted basis, Jim, on August 31st. I can remember back in the 90s when a stock split would be enough to send a stock up dramatically. Of course, we always need to tell people it's not changing the value of the company. It's important, particularly for the uninitiated. It doesn't mean the value is gone up. It's just more shares at a lower price.
Right. I always used to use a pencil when I was on TV where I would split it in half and say, do you really have more pencil? And the answer is obviously not. But David, we do have a cohort of investors who genuinely have seen only these stocks that are $1,000 stocks, except for when Tim Cook split before and Tim Cook splitting again, and it turns them off. Now, we should say it shouldn't. They don't want to buy one share. I mean, you know, this is not like going to a mall and buying some great Italian jewelry, and if they split it in 100 pieces, it would be really terrific. It's really something that is daunting for individual investors. I am all for the split. I am not all for buying the stock ahead of the split or buying the stock now because of the split. I just like it because all these new investors that have been brought in of late and how they would really want to take part in a Tesla or an Alphabet, for instance. And they just Amazon, and they just feel like, you know what, that one I can't do in the same way that Berkshire couldn't do it. A lot of the companies, when I speak to them, they say, you know what, the big institutions don't want it because they have to pay more commission per share. I think that's nonsense. The best kind of shareholder you could have is an investor, small person who wants to stick around. So I am all for this. And my view is being confused with the notion that it's creating value. It's creating no value, David, but it is bringing in new people, which I think is fantastic for the dinosaur collection that you and I have become. You're a Stega, okay? I'd like to think that I'm a Tyrannus, but I think I'm more of a Velociraptor. And we can absolutely be revived, and it can happen. We're not talking about dinosaurs ruling the world, but how about new investors coming in from Robinhood and other places? Isn't it great?
No. It is. It is a revitalizing thing. We want them, of course, to participate in the capital markets. We want them to actually understand what's going on, and to understand the underlying metrics of what values a company and how things work. But yes, without a doubt. And it's funny, Jim, I almost have lost sight of the fact that Google is $1,480 and Amazon is $3,080.
Yeah, it's just a price tag that people can't get used to, so they don't buy, and therefore they miss the run, say, from 400 or 300. I applaud these people, and I hope that Jeff Bezos watches and says, all right, I want some of those investors too.
Yeah. Well, Tesla going to be up. We'll keep an eye on the others as well. I think we're going to have a mad dash on the other side of this. Counting you down to the opening bell as well. 9 minutes from now, we are looking for a higher open. A lot more Squawk on the Street coming right back. It's Wednesday, or as Jim and I like to say, hump day. And there's a look at how we're going to open a few minutes from now. Stay with us on Squawk on the Street. All right, let's get to a mad dash. I guess you're a glutton for punishment with this name, Jim, in terms of just discussing it. It's always been a battleground, hasn't it?
Yes, talking about a stock that came public in 1999, Plug Power. Now, this is an example. Why I bring it up is because this is a very popular stock among younger people. Why? Because people feel just like EV. We can talk endlessly about Nikola. This is one about hydrogen. They bought two. I had them one recently. They bought two companies. One is a hydrogen merchant company, which is very, very good. They've got a hydrogen storage business. David, this has got It had adjusted EBITDA positive. Now, obviously, you like GAAP EBITDA. It didn't make any money. But watch this one. 30.7 million shares, 10 and a quarter. I think this one flies. Why does it fly? Because this is not the old Plug Power. By the way, they do have, you know, they have forklift businesses with Amazon, Home Depot, and Walmart. But this is probably the, this is kind of the market as we don't know it. But many do know it. A $10 stock that could be the next Novavax. It could be the next Sorrento. I mean, that's what people are in for. And I'm saying we must get used to this, do the work. I had Plug Power on because the new people deserve to know the facts and not just the chart.
Okay. Why was the stock looking down as much as 9% before you began talking?
Well, I mean, this is a pretty big slug of stock. And they need the money in order to be, because they made these big acquisitions. And I think people don't understand this. A lot of the younger people don't understand that you can do an equity offering. A lot of the cruise ships did it. But if you look, American Air, by the way, did it. But if you wait long enough and the business turns around, then it's actually a pretty good thing to buy. In this case, Plug Power's business is growing. And so I think you want to watch it to get the temper of the times, not recommending Plug Power, recommending watching Plug Power. If I want to recommend something, you know, I have to wait until midday because everything's up so much. It is a little taking your life in your hands to say, you know, today's going to be the recovery day versus today being the day where we buy the COVID stocks. I use Wells Fargo as the recovery stock, and I use NVIDIA, even though it's not really involved with COVID. I use that as the great momentum stock that benefited during this period, as you mentioned yesterday, the best acting stock.
Yeah, NVIDIA, right. The best performer, of course, and a name to be. You know, again, I always like to come back because you get so much grief sometimes, Jim, that you have. You've been a proponent of that and AMD for years. And
my wife says,
incredible,
my wife says, you
incredible
know,
creators of
forget
value.
The criticism. David brings up the stocks that you got right. So thank you, David. Of course, she does know I have a show. She doesn't know I have an evening show, but she happens to like you very much. You know that. She thinks you're a great guy.
I do. I do, and I like her as well. And I look forward to you two getting together again and seeing each other more
one
often. Jim, we're taking, there's the opening bell this morning. You can see the NYC, of course, and that is our real-time exchange back at headquarters. Also a tribute on the NASDAQ there to Sumner Redstone, of course, who passed away this morning at the age of 97. Life and legacy, of course, having built Viacom CBS, whose headquarters, by the way, Viacom right across the street, right there on 43rd and Broadway. Unfortunately, Jim, back to our conversation about the economy, many of those office buildings remain lightly populated. Even though you can come back, so many businesses not sending people back, so many businesses not talking about sending people back really now until the end of the year. We've made note, of course, of some of the larger companies have said you can wait till next summer. It's a seminal change in the way we do work. It continues right now, even though many people may be antsy to get back to the office. And of course, there is the economic toll on so many of those businesses that rely on people coming in and out of major urban centers every day.
Look, I'm glad you mentioned it because I think that there's a perception that, as Jamie Dimon said yesterday on Today Show, look, you want everybody back. Wanting everybody back and getting everybody back are two different things. There are lots of people who feel that they are at risk, that don't want to go back. They don't want to touch the elevator button. They don't want to be in the elevator with other people. They feel like while they can wear a mask and others can wear a mask, people are too close to each other. So, yes, you're absolutely right. And one of the things I talked about with Don Wood yesterday, Federal Realty, he has mixed use. And mixed use means he also has offices, too. And he's trying to fill the offices. But, David, it is something to behold that people found that it was really easy to work at home. And, by the way, you know what's not talked about enough? It's cheaper.
What?
It's cheaper to work at home yes. for companies. And they're finding that out. And they want to get out of these leases. And I think it's important to recognize that it's a beneficial thing for a lot of companies to have people work at home because of Zoom, which is a stock that has been under tremendous pressure in the last few days as people feel that we're in the recovery mode. Obviously, Zoom can't do as well if we're back in recovery. The stock can't. But the world's changed. The world's changed because it's really great to work at home if you have kids. It's great to work at home if you want to catch that game, if we ever go back to having kids go to school. And it's not so great to go to work at an office building at a time when you're worried about germs.
That is true. That is all true. And that is why I think, Jim, you and I may agree that it may be until we have a vaccine or effective antivirals that we don't see in mass people return to their office places, even though I think many people are getting tired of this. I mean, that, again, it's just anecdotal. It's just talking to the people that I speak to who allocate capital, who deal with deals, CEO, whoever it may be during the course of the day. I don't know if you're finding this. I'm getting the, you know what? 5 months is plenty. I'm getting tired of this. Not everybody, those early days when people were sort of very refreshed about it.
I saw one of my very best friends who does contracting work for me, contracting work with me last night. And I wanted to give him a hug, and then I realized, hold it, pandemic, stay away. Enough. I mean, there are people I want to shake their hands. I want to give them a hug. And of course, anyone who is sick or anyone who has lost a relative, I mean, that's far worse than what I'm doing. But I know that there's a sense that, okay, we've done this. Let's move on. But you can't.
No, you can't. And it's funny, you know, that argument about the commercial real estate was, well, they're going to need to space workers out more. But I'm getting more of the sense that nobody's coming back in full until there is a vaccine. And so it's simply going to be, to your point, trying to lessen their footprint because now they know 20-25% of their workforce at any one time can effectively work remotely. And so you do have to wonder about the future of commercial real estate, at least for the near term.
And I also think commercial real estate thrives on mass transit. And my friends who, again, it's anecdotal, who went on mass transit are done. They're done. They're just not coming in. They think that mass transit is an incubator. And a part of the country that doesn't have mass transit has had far fewer deaths. It's just a fact.
Yeah, that may be true. Although recent studies indicate, for example, the New York City subway where everybody is wearing a mask, there has not really been any signs of transmission at this point. I think you're right. Fear will dictate. Fear will win out. But in so many things where we try to actually get to the facts here, Jim, they may be somewhat different than the reality.
Oh, you're right. I've been dealing with aerospace.
Or I should say the reality may be different than the concern.
Aerospace, airlines, since mass. David, you don't hear about sickness because there isn't sickness. But when you bring that up, it seems almost chimerical. Yep. How could they not be the incubators? And the answer is that people wear masks. And now there's still a mask debate. I say that slower than other things. But when you're with someone like from Owens & Minor, which is one of the largest makers of masks, they have the halyard mask, which makes it look like it's orange on the top, white on the bottom, which makes it look like a duck. It's very funny, but it's an N95. And the CEO just candidly admits it. Look, obviously, two masks, no death. Two masks, no death. It's pretty simple. But there are people who rebel, and they are, James Dean, they are truly rebels without a cause.
They are. And we can just continue to encourage people as we watch, thankfully, the infection rates start to decline in some hot spots in the country. Jim, let's talk about the markets a little more focused here, though. You know, the banks, we put them up there. They are rallying today.
Extraordinary.
Wells Fargo amongst them. At the same time, I mean, Morgan Stanley's positive for the year. Now, that may be a result of their fortuitous acquisition of E-Trade, whose business has never been better.
Right.
As well as the differentiation of their business versus a Goldman Sachs, for example. Market cap of Morgan Stanley now, $10 billion more than Goldman Sachs.
That's incredible. But we have to. James Gorman has put together a franchise that I think deserves to sell at 1.3, 1.4 book. David, it doesn't have a lot of risk to it. Goldman is at book. It's a dry cleaner. They take the stuff in, they put it out. They have the Marcus business, which eventually is going to be good. Jamie Dimon yesterday was telling you that the business is quite good. We don't know yet from Charlie. Charlie Scharf has inherited a franchise that would we ever realize that? Isn't it incredible that it's by far the worst? Wells Fargo. By far the worst.
Yes. By far the worst.
By far the worst. And I mean, to the point where I worry about what can happen, but I think it's a coiled spring. But this move is about fewer defaults. And that has not, it's not true. It's not true. So what do you do, David, if you look at the actual 8Ks, if you look at the actual businesses and the defaults are piling up and yet the stocks rally? What do you do?
I don't think you buy them, do you, Jim?
No, and that's why you buy Morgan Stanley, because they don't have that risk. They're, you know, it's true that the assets go out the door every morning, but Gorman has reinvented the franchise. I am suspicious of that move, but I do think that momentum is an extraordinary thing, and the momentum into the banks is almost as if they're saying they have to play catch up, not unlike the autos. And I struggle with the idea that, once again, I think that the big growth stocks that are involved with being at home are going to go down. I just think they are. There's not enough capital for both, David. There's just not.
Right. Although this morning, with the S&P up almost 1% and getting awfully close to all-time highs, Jim, we do have sort of a broad market rally. We do have the growth names. We have Apple rebounding. We have Facebook up 2%. Amazon up 1.2%. Right. So we're not seeing that diversion we saw yesterday, or what we call rotation, where some of the cyclical names were really benefiting. As you pointed out, perhaps for a very short time, it would be, but today it's sort of more broad-based.
I have my tells, Fastly, CrowdStrike, Zscaler, RingCentral. These are companies I have won quite a bit, and their stocks are already turning red. And Okta is probably the key. That is the one that sells at 30 times sales, David. And I look at those stocks, and they tend to be, they're the leaders in terms of what's going to happen. So I know I want to follow FANG. But it's Okta that tells the tale. As strange as that is, but it is a $30 billion company. And it is involving, if you have to toggle between various spreadsheets and Microsoft versus Google, if you want to, if you have to toggle between, which is like a younger person's job, obviously, then you use Okta, which is the passport onto the web. It's a $24 billion company. Keep an eye on it. It has led the market down, and then it tends to infect Zoom video, ZM. Just pointing
it
out.
So it trades at 30 years worth of revenues right now.
Yes.
That's what it's being valued at. 30. Right. But obviously, we expect those revenues are going to grow very, very quickly. Are you questioning at all its growth rate?
Todd McKinnon is fantastic, and you need the product. It's a necessity. I'm not questioning its growth rate. I'm questioning what we'll pay for its growth rate. And this is a best-in-show company that has been a leader. I know we want to just say Facebook's the leader, and I'm interviewing Sheryl Sandberg later today, the COO. But the one that I just keep an eye on is Okta, because it's the one that has been that is the envy of everyone in Silicon Valley and doesn't get talked very much.
And always a good time to promote our small business playbook. There you can see it, of course.
Gary V.
You can learn more at cnbcevents.com, small business playbook. Sheryl Sandberg's coming on when?
This is an event that is you subscribe to. I'm interviewing her at 3:45.
Oh, right. It's today at 1 o'clock. That's
yes.
You doing the interview. Got
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Okay. But David, I think that it's very interesting while we bring it up that Facebook was a flashpoint for Biden, for Harris. Both of them have questioned whether it should be broken up. And it's very interesting because obviously Harris is actually close, fairly friendly terms, I'm quoting an article here, with Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg. And I just think it's important to keep an eye on who wants to break up what, because the Democrats obviously don't like concentration of power among tech.
Yeah. Jim, it's been a little while since I mentioned SPACs, given the... Well, I mean, they're like everybody's got one at this point, a SPAC and a dream.
Right.
But I did want to mention it today.
Navarro, by the way, Kodak was not his SPAC. Just that was being facetious.
It was not his SPAC. Yes. We were being facetious when we talked about Kodak, which did have an earnings call yesterday. Really not much to share from what came out of that.
No.
In terms of the prospects for getting that loan from the DFC or whether they have a shot at it. Didn't really hear too much from the company's.
No.
He's exec chair, right? Because he's actually CEO of a different company.
Yeah, it's kind of
a stock.
It's kind of one of those things that your government used to look into. It's pointing it out.
We still
like
have
McDonald's,
so many
they used to look into things like
about.
What happened with Easterbrook, where he's giving stock to someone and they didn't bother to get the emails. They didn't look at the email. They didn't freeze the evidence. Those are things, David, the Justice Department, the SEC. Is the SEC going to be canceled?
By the way, it's the Pac-12, right, and the Big Ten.
But at the SEC, when they speak of it being canceled, is it the Washington? Is it the one in Washington, or is it the one that has the really fast guys that tend to get drafted?
I got the joke. No, will they look into this? Who knows?
I just came back from California.
The politicization of so many things is unique in some ways. Others will argue with that. Come back to TikTok and Microsoft and.
Right.
Whether another company would emerge there. But really,
how's that deadline what I continue
to hear on that, Jim, is the difficulty if you were another company. Well, does the president like you?
Right.
Do you have a shot? Could you really pass national security clearance? What will come up? What will you deal with? It's somewhat unique. Let me finish quickly my thought on
the
SPACs, because we do have a couple of pricing tonight.
Boeing going down. Those are the two. You know, keep those on
your
screen.
Got it. On the SPACs, you got the Billy Bean, Jerry Cardinale SPAC pricing tonight. I think it's about $500 million. Remember?
Name? That's small ball. What's the name?
It's Redbird, right? Isn't it
Redball?
Sorry, Redball.
Redball.
Yeah, not Redbird. Redbird is actually Cardinale's fund, which is a large fund. But they conceivably are going to be looking for opportunities to almost take a sports franchise in some way public, it's possible, or merging a data business in some way, or getting something along those lines public. There's a look at Bean. But they'll price that deal tonight. There may be some liquidity needs among owners of some teams, you could imagine, Jim, given the problems in terms of not getting any TV revenue.
You are so right. And you know, we haven't even talked about interest rates going up. So, but you know, maybe he does a deal still. The rates are low enough. David, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. There's got to be teams
that
needed
watching.
Small market teams that were relying on it.
Yeah, Red Ball. And then also Dragoneer, which is a very well-known fund out west. Yeah. Private market investor in Alibaba. Atlassian. Is that Atlassian? Is that the name? How you pronounce it? I know you like that company for a while. Datadog. Yeah,
Datadog and Atlassian both missed the quarter, so to speak. They did not blow the numbers up.
60 million shares at $10 for Dragoneer. So we're keeping an eye on the
SPACs. And Tontine, don't forget
I know somebody else who's keeping an eye on them, and that's Bob Pisani. He's keeping an eye on the broad market, but has been following in this trend as well. Bob, good morning.
The SPAC business is just amazing how it's blown up, and it's obviously people are seeking other sources of liquidity, and the SPACs are providing it. You've been doing a great job covering that, David. It's been a great open, 6-1, advancing to declining stocks. Breadth has been expanding recently. That's one of the bull arguments that we've been seeing. There's a slight value tilt again today, but not great. All 11 sectors open to the upside. So banks are up, energy are outperforming. Industrial's doing well. Tech is doing equally well. So Apple's really supporting the Dow. All five mega caps open to the upside. Healthcare's lagging a little bit, but you see, still a value tilt, but tech participating, you get a very powerful rally. What's going on in the last 24 hours? You know, we moved 50 points yesterday, 30 points in the overnight. I don't think the narrative has changed, though. I'm really struggling to say things are different. I don't see it. I know there's some question about the stimulus. I know we don't have a date for it, but the deal is coming. The market believes that. That's the most important thing. Everyone believes the Fed's going to do something in their September 16th meeting, maybe even talk about some expanded QE program. A lot of expectations around that. Earnings have been largely above expectations. We've been talking about these 22% beats for most of the S&P 500. That's amazing. As for everything else, economic data has been above expectations as well. The valuations, yeah, the bears are right. It's a really expensive market. We're trading at close to 20 times 2021 numbers, 20 times, 1 year ahead of us. That's an awful expensive market, and the bears have got a point about that. If you want to see what the market really wants, they want to hear, yeah, things are lousy, but they're getting better. So look at Brinker today. Brinker is Chili's and Maggiano's. It's a restaurant chain. The comp store sales down 36%, but that was about in line. The numbers themselves, better than expected. And the guidance for the following quarter, the quarter we're in now, generally a little bit better than expected. So yes, things are lousy, but getting better. That's the central story. That's each story. And that is the central story for the market and why it keeps holding up so well. The rotation story, I don't know. It's a little bit overdone, I think. We've seen in the last few days, yes, the banks, industrials, energies have outperformed. Tech has underperformed. Okay, but this is only the last few days. Look at what's led the rally since the February 19th high. It's really technology stocks and some of consumer discretionary stocks, like Amazon, for example. That's the big mover here. But tech is the big mover overall, and particularly mega cap tech. We keep emphasizing how important those top five stocks are. Since the top in February 19th, Amazon, 42%. I can't emphasize that enough and how important that is in moving not only the sector, but the overall market. Look at these big moves up in the big cap tech names here. And meantime, what's lagged the rally? I know we're all excited about bank stocks moving in the last 4 days, but look, industrials, banks, and energies have been big, big laggards overall. David, there's a big question about what it would take to get money out of tech, because the big money is still in technology, clearly. Maybe if the Fed would disappoint, maybe if we got a imminent news of a vaccine tomorrow, maybe something would make a difference to really dramatically broaden out. But for the moment, the big money and the volume still remains in technology. David, back to you.
Bob, thank you. Bob Pisani. From Bob to Rick, let's check in on fixed income markets this morning. Rick Santelli, take it away.
Good morning. Good morning, David. You know, we had our second of inflation data, PPI yesterday, CPI today. Both were hot. Consumer price index especially hot, up 6/10 both on headline and ex food and energy. So look at a chart of 10-year note yields. And you can see on this 24-hour chart that we've been moving higher pretty much for the last several plus days. And consider that right on the 8:30 Eastern number, we're just a whisker shy of 69 basis points. Open the chart up to mid-June. If we would have stayed there and closed there, it would have been best closed since the third week in June. But as it stands, on you see on the chart, we are hovering at best level since July, but we are losing ground just a little bit. We have a 10-year note auction today at 1 Eastern. I'll be covering. Look at 10s minus 2 spread from July 1st. Bob talked about banking stocks doing better. This spread is really starting to steepen out over 50 basis points. Keep an eye on it if it gets above 53. And finally, this is July 1st start of gold. It was just four sessions ago, made its all-time high close at around 2069. We've already shaved $100 off, and it has nothing to do with inflation, really, or the dollar. Just the logistics of where all the trades have been located. Jim, David, back to you.
Rick, thank you. Rick Santelli. As we give you a look at the market here, we'll head to break. And Jim and I on the other side, I want to talk Qualcomm as well if we get a minute, because an important victory in an appeals court there that is worth mentioning this morning. A lot more Squawk on the Street. Coming right back. Welcome back. As I'd mentioned briefly just a moment ago, I did want to take a look at shares of Qualcomm, Jim. You know, it was such a tumultuous year, a year ago or so for that company. So many things. But one of the keys, of course, was that loss in court over that FTC case that ruled that they had monopolized the use of their chips. Well, they got a very favorable ruling in appeals court, didn't they? Where the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled unanimously that the FTC had not shown Qualcomm's core business practices related to its cell phone chips and patents were anything more than lawful attempts at profit maximization.
David, this was so overlooked by the analysts. I mean, I thought this was just gigantic. And the stock is getting a much higher price earnings multiple because it turns out that it's worth a lot more than people realize. This has always been a patent situation. And we know Malenkov, we know that he has been a, let's just say he's more of an engineer type than a salesperson. But holy cow, what a move. And remember, it was, there were people who wanted to buy it.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, they were involved in so much litigation through the years. Donald Rosenberg, their general counsel for so long. I mean, so many things. Oh, my. And we were talking about government intervention. I mean, let's not forget, of course, when Sophia said to Broadcom, no, you can't buy Qualcomm, and ended their hostile bid for the company. But it's ended up being potentially a very good thing for Qualcomm shareholders, as you see. Those are new highs.
NXPI are, well, and Qualcomm recent highs, are examples anyway. Yeah. Of the just say no turned out to make a lot more money for people. It is not what we usually see. Qualcomm said no. I remember, David, going out to a fabled dinner with you and some of the representatives of Qualcomm. I thought it was a done deal for Broadcom. And when I finished having that incredible, what was it, 1840 bottle of wine, I was convinced.
All right, Jim, we're going to take a quick break. We've got a lot more Squawk on the Street right after this. Take a look at the gainers this morning. You can see, led by Tesla, of course, with that expected split coming up towards the end of this month. Liberty Global also a big winner this morning, making a tender offer for Sunrise Communications. We've got a lot more coming right back. Let's get to Stop Trading with Jim.
David, Penn National Gaming is a company that David Portnoy works for, and it's got a big sports book. A lot of people felt that when football, like a Big Ten, Pac-12, withdraws, that it would hurt the stock. Notice how it's not hurting the stock. I think that's important. It is my favorite gaming stock, and I did reach out to Portnoy about splits, and he said, love splits, the more stocks, the more they go up, the more money we make, more of everything. And this is David being tongue-in-cheek, and I just want people to realize that he does, you can follow him. He's not saying he's the great investor. He has fun. He likes it. But most importantly, I think there's big overlap between stocks and a sports book. And Penn Nat is doing quite well. Tonight I've got Cisco after their earnings. I've got EBS, which is Emergent. They're going to be making a lot of the drugs for the vaccines because there's not a lot of capacity. And then JCOM, J2 Global, that was the target of a big short rate, and it looks like they put that short rate to rest. It used to be one of the best performing stocks. I think you can do it again. Thank you, David.
Jim, thank you, my friend. I will see you right back here tomorrow. Everybody else will see you later today.
Yeah. You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.